The main business of this center was the taking of LSD. On any day, one third of the people present would be sitting on the beach or crowded around a table on the open dining patio, planning the session that they were going to have that night, while another third would be hidden in the session rooms or wandering far down on the sand in the middle of an LSD session. And another third would be clustered in awed and bedazed groups, reporting on and recording the session they had just finished. There's a lot of rain in the Mexican summer, and almost every afternoon late and every evening, a brief thunderstorm would pass over the bay. Lightning would crackle down, and the beach, the ocean, and the surrounding hills would flash into lightning view. The night sessions would usually end in the water as the LSD voyagers would float out to watch the first rays of the sunrise. In addition to being a sensory paradise and a spiritual oasis, the center in Mexico was productive and profitable. Scientific reports were written, articles published. The center paid its own way. But eventually, this gentle and harmonious way of life came to the attention of the police, a group of people who were not especially dedicated to growth, pleasure, and spiritual discovery. The center was closed, and the group dispersed. There was one interesting sidelight on the deportation proceedings. Of the three Secret Service agents from Mexico City who closed the center, one was under 30 years old. I got to know him fairly well because he was intensely curious about what we were doing and what we were experiencing. He had a Cuban girlfriend and used to smoke marijuana with her. He also had a brother who was the governor of another state in Mexico. And after checking our books and interviewing our members, he took me aside and said, "Señor Larry, you have going here the greatest gold mine that the tourist business has ever seen. All of your guests feel that you are not charging enough money, and none of them ever want to leave your hotel. Come to my brother's state, and we will find a hotel, and let me be your partner." That was our summer of pilgrim wandering. We wandered from Mexico down through the Caribbean to the French islands, the British Islands, looking for 1 square mile of ground on this planet where we could live quietly, expand our own consciousness, contribute handsomely to the country in which we live. But such a place was not to be found, free from political or religious interruption. If today I could find 1 square mile of ground on this planet, there would be several hundred thousand people who would be willing and eager to join our explorations. But no such place seems to exist. For the first time in human history, there seems to be no land of exile or immigration, where groups of people sharing unpopular spiritual beliefs and practices can remove to live in peace. Our own country, you remember, was founded by exactly such small groups of religious exiles. Why is it that every generation forgets this lesson of the past? Why is it that each generation harasses and persecutes its gentlest, wisest, and holiest men, exactly those men that succeeding generations will revere? The answer to this question has nothing to do with intelligence or social prejudice or conservatism. The answer is neurological. The nervous system of the adult human being is so set up that it registers intense neurological pain when confronted with an idea or method which liberates man from his addiction to symbols, from his addiction to the current tribal symbol system. Early in the life of every mammal, in the first few days, as a matter of fact, the nervous system focuses on a nearby object that moves and makes noise. And around this imprinted object, the conditioned symbol system that comprises the discriminating, perceiving, and executing mind. Most human beings, in the early days of their life, have imprinted a moving, noise-making event which they call mother. And upon this imprint, they base their conceptions of what is right and real and true. Almost everyone is painfully afraid of displeasing mother, is painfully shocked by confronting an idea or method which can liberate consciousness from the original imprinted chessboard. President Eisenhower ran this country in such a way as to avoid displeasing his mother, who ran a small town store in Iowa. President Johnson maps out national and international policies designed to please his mother. Defense Secretary McNamara moves millions of men and machines in such a way to please a mother who must have indeed been an extremely tidy and efficient woman. But who is a mother afraid of? Mother is afraid of grandmother. And grandmother imprinted her chessboard of values and realities about 100 years ago. Now here we come to my problem as a spiritual teacher in 1966. I can turn you, the younger generation, on to your own spiritual potentialities. But if I do so, I get in trouble with your parents. But that's not completely hopeless, because I can also teach you how to turn on your parents and gently and lovingly open them up to some of their possibilities. But the hitch here is that your parents are imprinted on grandmother, and grandmother is dead, and I can't turn her on. About 6 years ago, after my first series of psychedelic sessions, I realized that it was within my power to select and play almost any game, or even to deal myself out of games entirely. I decided at that time that the game I wanted to play was to become the holiest and wisest man of my generation. Specifically, to expand and elevate the consciousness of the entire human race. Now this may sound like a surprising ambition, but I don't see why. If you can select any game, why not pick the most exciting and challenging game around? With full knowledge, of course, the knowledge that comes from a contemplative series of LSD sessions, that all human games end in a tie, and that the chances of succeeding in any human game are always statistically dubious. After 6 years of trying to become the holiest and wisest man of my generation, I'm ready to make a progress report. The way it looks from here, I have about 1 chance in 10 of reaching my goal. It still looks like a good gamble to me. In the last 6 years, we have witnessed an astonishing expansion and elevation of human consciousness in this country, and an equally predictable reaction of panic and anguish against this psychedelic revolution. When we started researching the use and benefits of psychedelic drugs at Harvard 6 years ago, we ran into a puzzling situation. We discovered very early in the game that we could predict the reaction of anyone we talked to about LSD by knowing one thing about the other person, and that was his age. The competent and distinguished psychologists and philosophers at Harvard, exactly those men whom you would expect would be most entranced and delighted at a new tool for studying consciousness, responded with boredom, impatience, and irritation at our reports about the psychedelic experience. The graduate students were interested and eager to do research in this new field, The undergraduates were enthusiastic and unstoppable in their search for this experience. And what was most shocking and dangerous to my safety and tenure at Harvard was the fact that high school kids were the most interested of all.